Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Road to the Oscars 2024 show, where performance is being weighed against politics. Stay tuned for our predictions in major categories. It's gonna be a fun ride. You're listening to the Words on Flick show with me, Janine Coveney.
You're listening to the Words on Flick show on eWater Radio, KEWR DB.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR, DB, or its affiliates.
All right, all right. Welcome, Words on Flicks fans and friends, to the February 2024 edition of the podcast. I'm your host, entertainment journalist and movie fan, Janine Coveney. The subject for today is the upcoming Academy Awards ceremony, otherwise known as the Oscars, which take place on Sunday, March 10th. So we're still 3 weeks away. So today I have asked a very good friend and frequent guest of the podcast, who is very talented, opinionated, and savvy, to kick around some thoughts with me about what the Oscars will bring in terms of statuettes for the last year's crop of films. But we'll also be talking about everything under the sun related to movies. Today, I'm happy to welcome content creator, producer, former music publishing exec, and all-around savvy guy, Derek Thompson. Thank you, Derek, for being here.
Hey, Janine. Very happy to be here.
Hey, hey, hey. So I'm so happy you could join me. So let's kick this thing off by first addressing the fact that despite two major strikes last year by writers and actors, there's still a plethora of films that were produced over the last year and just like too many for everyone to have seen.
To see, right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I did good. I got to say, I saw, I think there's 10 nominated in the best film. I saw seven of them, which is really good for me. So that's really, really, really good. Yeah, and I just actually saw, even though Oppenheimer came out last summer with Barbie, I just saw it in the theater in Dolby on about 2 weeks ago. Yeah, so, and it was good. And I would say they have the momentum going into the Oscar race, but I thought it was good. Don't get me wrong, I thought it was good. But Best Picture, I'm not really sure, you know.
Yeah.
If we would have had this conversation back in the fall, I would have said Killers of the Flower Moon for sure. But now I'm not so sure if that's gonna like carry them over the finish line.
I feel you. So yeah, 10 pictures up for Best Picture. I think I saw 8. So just to remind people what they are, and we'll go back. It's American Fiction, which I'm so glad got on the list. Anatomy of a Fall, which I did not see. Barbie, Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, which you raved about first to me. And I thought Oppenheimer, Past Live, which I did see. Poor Things, woohoo, and The Zone of Interest. So that is a lot of films.
Yeah.
And so before we even get to that crop of madness, what is there a movie that you're mad that you missed or you're still trying to see? Like for me, it's The Book of Clarence, but that's not even in the running.
Yeah.
It'll probably be next year.
Yeah. I saw Book of Clarence and I liked it. But I really want to see Anatomy of a Fall, and I haven't seen it yet. And it's nominated for Best Picture. And from what I understand, and I've not seen the movie, so I can't really comment too much. But just the premise of the fall is actually based on a fall. I guess somebody falls and has an accident, and that leads to like a whole discussion because their marriage was crumbling to begin with, I think. And there's some accusation that you know, the living person might have, you know, been the person who, you know, who made the person fall, you know. So I think it's all of that going into it. And it just sounds fascinating to me. So I do want to see that.
It does sound fascinating, but isn't it in another language?
Oh, I don't, is it? I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay. I was under the impression it was like almost like a foreign film.
Okay. Parenthetically, fans and friends, Anatomy of a Fall is in French and English.
Because Past Lives is in Korean and English.
Yes.
But for some reason, it's considered like a foreign film. I don't know.
Yeah. And my friend saw that, by the way, who is a film fanatic more than me. And he could not stop talking about that movie.
Really?
And he loved it. Yeah. I don't know what you thought about it, but he loved it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I actually have a copy of Anatomy of a Fall in my bounty of many award show giftings as a critic, but I just didn't get around to it. And I didn't think it was going to be that important. Well, foolish me, you know. So you already mentioned Killers of the Flower Moon, and it just seemed like that was a big, big picture for, and it was a Scorsese picture, and Leonardo DiCaprio and Niro, who are the longtime collaborators with Martin Scorsese, were both in it, and it earned Lily Gladstone a Golden Globe Award for her performance, the first Indigenous woman to ever win at the Golden Globes. So that, but now I don't know. I mean, best picture, I don't see how it's going to overcome the gigantic shadow that's being cast by Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Yeah. First, I want to say we should say that that was one of the snubs too, because Leonardo DiCaprio was not nominated for best actor. And I think that that's a big, like, I'm not really big on snubs and everything, but I think that's a big snub by the Oscar, by the Academy. And I think
did you think his performance was all that great?
I actually did think his performance was great. I thought he and, you know, De Niro went toe to toe, and De Niro was nominated for best supporting actor. So I thought, and she was nominated, like, as you said, for best actor. And it would only make sense that he, because he totally matched them, you know, scene for scene and line for line in the movie. And so I just assumed that he would have been nominated. So, yeah.
Wow. I just thought his performance, I mean, he's always good. He's an amazing actor. But to me, his character was underwhelming, befuddled, confused. I didn't feel like it was that big of an acting challenge compared to what the others did. And in the case of a field of really talented acting, you know, possible nominees, I didn't think he rose to the top. But so that's interesting that we, you know.
I mean, I respect that. I respect that. We disagree, but I respect it.
But what a movie. I mean, I know we've talked about this movie before. I mean, it left me so shaken, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And let's just talk about the fact that it was like 9 hours long.
Oh.
And that in itself is a challenge. But at the end of the movie, I really didn't feel as though I'd sat through, you know, a 3-hour movie. It felt like, I thought the pacing was fantastic, which was my problem with Oppenheimer, by the way. I felt the pacing was just so incredibly painfully slow. And I thought that at least that Killers of the Flower Moon, it moved. And the story just kept, you know, the layers of the story itself, I felt fully engaged from the time I sat down to the time I left.
Well, you're a special individual, because my life started to pass before my eyes at Killers of the Flower Moon. I think the last segment, I think it would have been enough for me to know that De Niro and the other perpetrators of the crimes against the Osage Indians were arrested and about to face, you know, charges. I could have done, you know, that would have been enough for me to end it there. And then they put a, you know, something on the screen to tell us what happened. Like, to go through that whole trial, and then you got a whole new crop of actors showing up in those courtroom scenes. I just, that made it really long to me, but still, they wrapped it up nicely and they were really respectful of.
They were totally respectful of the heritage and, you know, the culture, without a doubt. It was like they handled it. I thought that they were like behind the scenes. There were so many people from the nation involved in the making of the movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think in that sense, it is a very powerful movie. It's an important movie. I don't think it's going to be Best Picture, but.
Right.
But then Oppenheimer. So Oppenheimer, it's also a movie about a character in American history who people have conflicted feelings about because of what he achieved historically in developing the bomb. And I feel like it's one of those, you need to be really smart to, you know, like, I'm no dummy, but this, a lot of what was going on was happening way above my head. Like, I'm trying to keep up with all these scientists and what they're talking about and who they are, you know, all these actors and who they're supposed to represent and what their contributions are to the project. And it just became overwhelming to me.
I thought that, I agree with most of what you said. I do think that, like Killers of the Flower Moon, it was a story, a real story, that a lot of people don't know about. And I didn't know the history of the guy who invented the bomb. I had no idea. It was fascinating to me. Was it a little detailed? Absolutely. But it still was an important story. I just felt that, God, I don't know. It's like the way, I don't know if it was an editing thing, but I just felt that it just dragged out and dragged out and dragged out. I do think that one of the most creative moments of the movie, for people who have not seen it, and I don't want to give it away, but, you know, for him to have invented the atomic bomb, that scene when they were testing it and it goes off, like, that's one of the most powerful scenes because it's dead silent.
Yeah.
Like, the rest of the movie is loud, and then all of a sudden you have silence with the actual explosion of the bomb, and you would think it would have been the other way around. And I thought that was pretty genius of them and effective of them to do that.
It is effective because of the power of the bomb itself, and also foreshadowing the amount of damage and impact it will have on so many people. That moment in the film is given that little bubble
of space.
And it's also interesting in the sense that, and I haven't, you know, I saw the movie, but I don't remember it word for word. But I do get the sense that here the government drafted this brilliant man to spearhead this major, major project. And then in the end, he ends up scorned and thrown away, basically, by the same people, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he lost a lot of his credit in the scientific community as a collaborator. I don't even remember how it ends, but,
and also, can we just give a big props to whoever cast the movie, because I didn't realize there were all these people in the movie. Like, Kenneth Branagh is in the movie and Casey Affleck is in the movie, and I was like, oh my God, the people kept just popping up. And the guy who played Einstein was just like, I was like, oh my God, the casting is just pretty genius. So I was kind of pleasantly surprised at that.
It is. And Robert Downey Jr. really earned his...
He's good. He's really, really good.
He's always good.
Yeah, you know?
You know, a Robert Downey Jr. moment, you know, God bless him for all that he went through in terms of drug issues. And he really bounced back stronger, better than ever.
I think that it's going to come down... Before I saw the movie, and we'll get to it later, I'm a big Bradley Cooper fan in the sense of the Maestro project. I think that Cillian Murphy is probably, he's may be the one as far as acting, because there seems to be that momentum as far as best actor. I think it's going to be down between him and Paul Giamatti for the holdovers. I think those are the two like finalists for it. I could be wrong, but that's what, after seeing Oppenheimer, that's my take on it for sure. So.
I feel you. Cillian Murphy is a fascinating performer, and his face is so unique. You know,
Yeah.
he has a very unique look. And in fact, I was like, Emily Blunt could really be like his twin. Like, if Cillian Murphy had like long hair and lipstick, he would be Emily Blunt. But in terms of that Oscar race, I always feel like the Oscars don't value, or the membership, the voting membership, don't really value comedic actors or lighter stories in the same way that they value big, heavy, historic biopics. And in that sense, Cillian Murphy really carried that movie. Like, he there were very few scenes that he was not in. You know, we saw him as a scientist, we saw him as a husband, we saw him as a lover, we saw him, you know, he really had a 360 degree performance. Whereas Paul Giamatti, like, really, he's a great actor. I love Paul Giamatti, but could he, his performance in The Holdovers could be compared to his performance in Sideways, right? He's still kind of same curmudgeon, you know, he's a writer and he's good at what he does, but I don't think he really has a chance
But
against.
I think that and I hear every word you say it. I totally get it. But I think that if you look back at the history of the Oscars, they love a surprise and they love to go against the grain of, you know, whatever the because they're the last big award show. So they and so if there's like a, you know, a sweep of SAG and, you know, Golden Globes, all that, they love to be the one to say, nope, we're gonna do this. I mean, Moonlight is a perfect example. Like you get the Moonlight won that year over I think La La Land, and La La Land was just expected to like sweep everything, and Moonlight is like, oh no, we're not gonna do it. So yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised. The Holdovers to me is like the little movie that could, and it has a lot of heart. There's a lot of heart in that movie. Like you just feel for everybody in the movie. You feel for Divine Joy Randolph. You feel for Paul. You feel for the kid who's I forgot the kid's name, who's with them on the Boston trip. You feel for everybody, and you want everybody to just win. And that kind of feeling sticks with you when the credits are rolling. And I think that goes a long way in the Academy voting.
And plus, there's so much time between, you know, all that run up of awards, the SAG Awards, Independent Spirit Awards, the Golden Globes were like January 8th, like the first week in January, and here we have to wait to March. So that is a lot of time for, I don't know when the voting is done in comparison to when the voting is done for those other awards, but that's some time for people to kind of change their minds or see things differently. Or so I think you're on to something there. There may be some surprises in store. Now, I don't want to get too personal, but you did reveal to me that the holdovers might have started a little wetness around the eyes.
Oh my God, I totally cried. And I was not expecting to. I think that, you know, I really when I first heard about Divine Joy Randolph's performance, you know, I didn't know about the movie. I didn't know who she was. I didn't know anything about it. And so I said, like, let me go like see this movie. And her performance, I totally get it. It's so nuanced and so quiet. And I think it's the quiet moments that really define an actor. I mean, overacting is one thing, and when you see somebody really like acting, like that's one thing. But when you see them really like you felt her. For those people who don't know, like she is a cafeteria worker at a kind of prestigious
Boys
boys
Academy.
boys school boys academy that's upstate somewhere or in Vermont or New Hampshire somewhere, and her son has been was killed in the military, but her son had gone to that school, which is why he was able to go to that school because she worked at the school,
Right, and
and
this was in
he was
the 70s.
her only
And
go ahead go ahead
he died in Vietnam.
yes and he was the only he was her only child, and so. You, when I say you feel her pain from the time she comes onto the screen in every single scene, you feel everything about her, and it's such, like I said, it's such a quiet performance.
But she
It's
had
a
a powerhouse moment at a Christmas
at the
party.
party, at the Christmas party,
Yes. That scene, you know, for people who have not seen it, yes, it's a quiet performance. You learn about who this woman is. She's got some humor. She's got humility. She's got some wisdom. But when she goes to this party, she gets triggered.
Yeah.
And you do. You want to cry buckets of tears for
yes.
this woman.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And isn't it, it's a shame also to go back to, I'm not usually big on Oscar snubs, but it is really a shame that the director was not nominated for this year, because if he should have totally been nominated for this movie. I mean, it had that, the way the movie is shot, you feel like it's a 1970s kind of movie. Like, it doesn't look like it's current. It feels old in a good way old.
Right. And it is set in that era. It is set. Yeah. 70s, so it totally has that feel to it, and that is important. And you learn the backstories of all three of these characters: the Paul Giamatti teacher character, the kid who gets left behind at the school, and why he's left behind.
Yes, yes.
About
yes.
It's just really a wonderful, wonderful character study.
Yep. Yep.
So
yep.
We're both fans of that.
Both fans, big fans.
Big fans. Okay. I know that I touched on The Color Purple a little bit in my December show. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I was surprised that people seem to go to the theater and be shocked that it was a musical. And there seems to be a backlash against musicals in general. And the New York Times had even written a story saying that the studios that are making these films are soft peddling the fact that they are musicals, even in their promotion, which makes no damn sense to me. Like, if you're going to invest the money in a musical and promote it, why are you downplaying the fact that these people are going to break out and sing and dance? It makes no sense.
See, I don't know. I necessarily agree with that, because if you watch the Super Bowl, one of the big ads was the ad for Wicked, which is, you know, proud to proclaim that it is a musical, and it has two big gigantic stars, and that trailer was cut to make me want to see it. And I haven't even seen Wicked the play. I haven't seen it yet. I've never seen it, but I'm fascinated to see this movie. First of all, I'm a big Cynthia Erivo fan, so she can do no wrong. She can do no wrong for me, so I'm excited about that already. But I don't know about the thing. The thing with The Color Purple is just like, it was so, I've never seen a movie that was so polarizing, especially among the Black community. I mean, it was, you had two sides from the time Christmas Day, when it did really well and made the big splash. After Christmas Day, it kind of went downhill, because you have these two camps. One is a camp that absolutely loved the movie and loved Fantasia and loved everything she did. And another are people who are just like, I don't know, they keep comparing it to the original movie, which I think that's unfair. And it's based on the musical, which is based off of the book. So you have a step in between, and people keep forgetting that. And is it a traditional musical? I mean, that's up for debate, because it's not a musical like West Side Story.
No, it's not.
It's a movie where all of a sudden they break out into song every now and then. And you're like, oh, okay, there's a song right here. And I was like, oh, wow. But I personally liked the movie, and I was kind of surprised by the backlash. It didn't make any sense to me.
And I'm wondering if the promotion and the fact that Taraji Henson was saying in public about some of the issues that she and some of the actors faced in the production negatively impacted people's impression of the movie. I mean, I'm seeing false headlines like she's suing Oprah or Oprah's suing.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is not true,
yeah.
but
yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think that Taraji timed her observances correctly. Mm-hmm. While you're promoting a movie is not the time to vent your spleen about what happened.
Yeah, the whole thing was a mess. It was a mess.
However, I am happy to see that we do have a Color Purple performer nominated in the Best Supporting Actress role for Danielle Brooks, because to me, she really made that role of Sophia her own. She was really feisty. She was really funny. She wasn't trying to be Oprah. She was delightful, I thought, you know.
Yeah. That role has always been problematic to me, even from the beginning with Oprah, you know, walking through the cornfield and, you know, the iconic moments of, you know, you told Harpo to beat me. It's like, because the book is such a serious book.
It is.
And so that the way they filmed it in the movie originally, and I guess it is to bring some, you know, nothing wrong with bringing comic relief to a serious story, but it just, it was always a distraction to me, almost like too, and that's what we were talking about, you know, performances being nuanced as opposed to over the top. I just think that role, no matter who plays it, it's always going to be an over the top role, which kind of takes away from it to me. Like, I love Danielle, don't get me wrong, I love Danielle and I loved her performance, but it was still a bit like, it was way up here. And I needed it to be just a little bit, you know, down here a little bit. Although I will say that the moment when Fantasia goes to see her in the jail for the first time is a very poignant moment. And the two of them really do very good jobs in that particular scene.
Exactly. Well, again, I might disagree with you a little bit, because I think the film needs some comic relief. And if you recall, even in the original film, there were some little moments of humor and levity, and it needs that because it is such a heavy...
It's a heavy book. It's a heavy, yes, I agree. Yes, you're right. You're absolutely correct. Okay.
So, and you know, I think when I saw, to go back to that New York Times story, I think they were talking about the film Wonka, which... I happen to love. I love musicals, and
which has been, it's been a huge success. Oh my God, a huge global success.
Yes, and I think they really did it right. But again, some people seem to be surprised that it was a musical. They just thought it was going to be like a straight story prequel to the you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory story, mm-hmm. and. Mm-hmm. You know, our boy really does a good job at singing and dancing. Is he a great singer? No. Mm-hmm. And why is the actor's name escaping me? He's in everything right now.
Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah, Timothée Chalamet. He is a talented dude, okay?
Very, very, very.
He knows how to put over a song. You know how mm-hmm. some people, they're not, you know, great singers, but you mm-hmm. listening to the words is really, really important. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I get it.
Okay, so the musical thing is over. So what are my other... Poor Things. Now, did you see Poor Things?
You know what? I got it. So I can't really give it a truly informed opinion on it because I didn't see it. But I will say that having seen all the other movies and having to sit through the trailer of that movie, it made me dizzy. The trailer made me dizzy. So I had no desire to even see the movie. So that's where I am. That's where I am on Poor Things.
Okay, well, Poor Things is a lot, okay?
All right, exactly. It's got to be.
Howsomever, I think Emma Stone is going to be a shoe-in.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Because she... Now, I love Margot Robbie, or however you say her name. I love her, too. She and Emma are similar in the sense that they really throw themselves completely...
Into the role, right.
Their
right.
role. Right. Like, right. you know, like Margot Robbie in...
Yeah.
What was the movie about old Hollywood?
The movie I was thinking of was Babylon.
That movie was bonkers, and she was over the top in it, crazy.
Right.
Emma Stone in this film, she plays a woman who's basically reanimated from the dead.
Okay.
And she's brought back to life with a baby brain by her mad scientist benefactor,
who is Willem Dafoe.
And he's a piece of work too. And so basically she's in an adult body with a baby brain. So she has to learn how to speak, how to walk, how to feed herself, how to dress herself, and learn the world. However, she's being brought up by a mad scientist who isn't exactly a mother figure. Nobody's teaching this girl really right from wrong. So she is out there doing her to the best of her ability. And when she discovers sex, it's all over. Like, things just take a turn. And it's a fascinating, fascinating performance. And also, the Academy loves when women get naked in a film. And this girl is like buckety naked in the film. Yeah. Like,
if I'm a Hollywood executive and you pitch me that movie the way you pitched it just now, I'd be like, what?
Exactly.
And what are you talking about?
And the other fascinating thing about it, which I'm sure you gleaned from the trailer, is there is no definitive time period that this movie takes place in.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
almost takes place in an alternative world.
In an alternative world, yes.
Victorian values and fashion with futuristic things and events and... Yeah. It's there's so much for your eyes to take in. And I mean, the set design, the costume design, it's just amazing. And I compare her journey to that of Barbie, who is also in a way a naive who becomes real and has to learn what real life is about.
Okay, I get that.
The Emma Stone performance is so much more raw, and it makes you ask or wonder to yourself, why are certain social conventions the way that they are? Because she's flouting them all. She's outraging society. She's doing what she wants and saying, well, why can't I? Why can't I do these things? And it makes you go, well, yeah, why not? You know? So it's a fascinating performance. I can't say that she's been my favorite actress, but she does some amazing things in this film.
So you think from that, you think that she is going to get the award over Lily Gladstone?
I believe so, because Lily Gladstone's performance is a quieter. I mean, it's very emotional.
Yeah.
Lily Gladstone's performance as an Osage Indian woman married to a white man who is betraying her in every possible way that a man can betray her as a husband and as a white man, as you know, it's a slow.
See, I don't think the Academy wants to miss this moment historically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't imagine them not giving it to Lily Gladstone. I can't. I would be, if I had to bet on all awards right now, I would just bet everything that Lily Gladstone would totally win the best actress category.
That is interesting. So it's political.
It's always political.
I know it's always political.
Yeah.
But
this is a moment, and you're talking about an organization that has been steeped in controversy, cultural controversy, for years. They always miss the boat. They always find a way to F it up. Always, always, always. And I just think that if they miss this moment, they are going to be kicking themselves in the pants for a number of years.
That is interesting, because I'm thinking purely about the role.
You're thinking about performance. You thought performance only. I get that. But voting is always the performance meets politics, and where do we come together in the middle?
Mm-hmm. I think you are right about that. And I'm just so naive, which is why I never was politically astute in any of my job situations.
Wow.
I'm like, I'm just here to do good work. Like,
right, exactly. Yes. If everybody was like that, this would be a great world, but nah, not gonna happen. No. Yeah.
What you mean I have to kiss somebody's ass?
Like, right, exactly. Yes.
Oh
yes.
No.
Right, right. Wow. I didn't know that about you. You're a purist. I did not know that.
I'm like a silly little babe in the woods. I'm like, you know, Mary had a little lamb.
Anyway. Right. Okay. I get wow.
But that being said, can the same politics work in Jeffrey Wright's favor with American fiction? I don't think it's going to happen for him, but I would be thrilled if it did. I mean, this man is an amazing actor. He's put in his time as second banana in so many flicks. He's in the James Bond franchise. He's in the Hunger Games franchise. He was fabulous in Angels in America on HBO. He was fabulous in Shaft. Everybody remembers that Dominican, was he Dominican or Cuban? I think it was Dominican gangster that he played in Shaft. He played Martin Luther King, for God's sake, in Boycott. And he was Basquiat, right? Like, I mean, he goes to different extremes. He is reliable. He is stage trained. He is fabulous. He's wonderful in American fiction.
Well, I think that I agree with everything you just said, 100%. But we're going to go back to politics again. We're going to bring that up into this conversation as well. The Academy clearly loves the movie based on the amount of nominations. I mean, the Sterling K. Brown nomination was very surprising to me. I was very surprised at that. I think that it's fantastic to see not one, but two Black men up in the best actor category. I kind of agree with you. It might not be his year to win, but the fact that he is there is very important. I think that they will show their love for American fiction to Cord Jefferson and his screenplay. I think the screenplay will totally win. It's just a great story. It's a fantastic story. And it's a great ensemble cast. And yeah, like you, I'm happy for Jeffrey to get his flowers now. I'm very, very, very happy. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Gotcha. I agree with that. I have to say though, that just looking at these nominations, it made me think about the shift in who our stars are now. There's a generational shift. Like, will we get more huge films from Denzel? Will we get any more nominations for Sam Jackson? Well, he I don't think he was ever nominated, but you know what I'm saying? Like that generation. Yeah. For Loretta Devine, for even for you know, our Olivias and our you know, that whole generation of actors and actresses who have come through, this seems to be new. Like Mahershala Ali is even.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, when there's always change in anything artistic, and you know, it's time for a new generation, obviously. And the change is coming slowly. You mentioned Mahershala, obviously. Coleman Domingo, who is in everything now, like everything. He's in every movie ever.
and I love him.
Yes. And so he's a part of this the new shift. And then, you know, people like, you know, Zendaya coming up and all these people. So it's time for a new generation. I think that, you know, the Denzels who have, you know, paved the way, they will keep making movies. I mean, Denzel just signed on to a new Spike Lee movie that's happening. I'm not sure what it is. But
I think it's like, a remake of a Kurosawa film.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. So these people, the older generation can still exist and do work as the younger generation, you know, takes the stage as well.
Mm-hmm. And then they age into, you know, your character actresses and actors. And, you know, the day that we see Halle Berry playing somebody's grandmother. Mm-hmm. You know, the fly grandmother is coming, I guess. Like, all right. So anything else you want to wait? So tell me a little bit about the Book of Clarence. You kind of glanced over it.
Yes. You know what? And it's funny because I think it's not, I hate to use the word flop, but it has not done well at the box office at all. And I'm really surprised it hasn't done well at the box office. I think it's a go ahead. You want to say something? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, really, are you surprised that a movie that is tangentially about Jesus and somebody, I mean, just judging from the trailers, some people could take it as being, you know, against the Bible or mocking.
I mean, maybe like you missed the politics thing. Maybe I missed that moment, but just from a cultural, artistic, fresh take on a story, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I really like the story. I love the casting. I forgot the guy's name who plays Elijah. But anyway, he's really, 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 really good. And it's just a really good, the only thing I didn't, my one criticism was, did you see it, first of all?
So right before I went on the Soul Train cruise and there just wasn't enough time. And when I came back, it was gone. It was gone from theater.
Right. So Lakeith, the only thing I didn't like was the Lakeith, plays, he has a twin, and I thought they could have got somebody else to play the other brother as opposed to him trying to play both parts. I hate seeing the whole I'm gonna play both parts of you know, identical twins. But that's my only, I thought he's fantastic in the movie. He's really, really good. He's totally endearing. I thought the script was funny. I just thought it was a good movie, and I was really surprised that it came and went like that. I was totally surprised.
You don't think staunch Christians should be alarmed by it? There's nothing in it that they
Oh my God, no. Absolutely not. No. Okay. No. Yeah. And when I did see it, it was like a 50-50 split, like racially. It was like 50% white people in the theater.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I was like, okay.
So is it a comedy or is it not a mockumentary, but you know what I mean? Like a...
It's more like that, but it's definitely more of the comedy. I would characterize it as a comedy.
Okay.
For sure. Okay. Yeah. But not like laugh out loud, you know, the whole time, but just like, there's just a lot of funny moments and they're designed to be that way.
Got it. Well, that's important. So it's interesting that this guy, the director who also did The Harder They Fall.
Yes.
I can't think of his first name. Samuel is his... last name, I believe.
I forgot his name too.
Steel's brother.
Yes. And Jay-Z as the producer.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So for Best Picture, we've got the 10 movies: American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro. We didn't talk about Maestro.
We did not talk about Maestro.
Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. So Maestro, I think we talked a little bit about it maybe in December, but I thought it was an interesting character study, and I love Bradley Cooper. I just felt that the movie, what is it? I grew up loving classical music and learning a lot about it because of Leonard Bernstein.
Bernstein, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was a folk hero to a lot of people. And particularly not only because of his music, but also because of political stances and all of that. And he was a big celebrity in New York City and worldwide. And to me, the movie, I'm sure it told the truth about who he was, but I didn't want to see my hero tarnished in a way. And not that being bi or gay is being tarnished, but I mean in the sense that there were things that were secret that I kind of wish had been kept secret. Because if you learn too much about your heroes, they're no longer your heroes. But that's just my personal
narrative. Oh, my God. Wow.
You know, again, the innocent in me. Like, I don't want to know. But I thought it was well written. I thought it was fascinatingly filmed. I love that dance sequence toward the beginning that kind of told what he was involved with, like his musical works. And I think you had to come to the movie knowing a lot about who he is and what he accomplished to be able to get the full impact of the film that's being shown to you. But toward the end, I feel like Cooper kind of strayed into caricature.
Wow.
Cigarette and the nose and the habits, the vocal, you know, habits and everything. I'm like, okay, enough. You know, I just I don't
Well,
know.
I would, first of all, back to the whole heroes being tarnished thing. That's a black thing that we need to really, we really as a people need to get over that, because we hate to see our heroes. You know, Whitney Houston is a great example of the movie. I think that, and the reason the movie didn't work was because they wanted to paint all of, you know, the great things about her, and she is great, but like you gotta have some flaws. As an
They're
artistic
human. People are
genius,
human.
you have to. And I think that's what the genius thing about it. I think for me, I mean, the fact that this man not only acted in it and did a phenomenal job, but he wrote the script
Yeah.
and he directed himself. And I was just like blown away by that. I think that he
And
really
the
captured.
conducting that he did, the conducting of an
Yes.
orchestra, he studied.
I was blown away by just his, like, he became Leonard Bernstein. See, I at the end, I didn't really get the caricature thing. I thought, especially when he was the old man dancing in the club, to me, I've seen that before. And so I was like, oh my God, he really is, like you said, the way Margot Robbie like threw herself into the role. To me, he really threw himself into this role. And I was kind of like, just I was blown away. He has not gotten the
Credit.
accolades that I thought, the credit that I thought he should have gotten in the award season. He's kind of got lost in the sauce with, you know, Killian, and even with Jeffrey and everybody else. He's at the end of the pack now, and I'm kind of surprised at that, because I just knew he was going to be like the number one person over there, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, maybe there'll be a surprise Academy Award night, I'm not sure, but yeah, I can't say enough good things about it. It was really one of my favorite movies. The way they did the musical theater part of
Yes.
his growing up in the black and white with, you know, Betty Comden and Adolph Green. Like, if you don't really know that world, you're kind of like, what is this? But I know that world, so I was kind of like, oh, they did it spot on. And the
Yes.
fact he got Sarah Silverman to play a serious role, and she was really good.
She was.
I was really surprised by a lot of things in this movie. So yeah, it was definitely one of my top two favorites.
I think that the effort that he made and his work ethic and his ability to embody a living person and to get the family to sign on what could have been a really problematic project for the family, but they were I do agree that it got lost. It got lo and it really is a towering achievement. I mean, I didn't love it, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it was a major achievement. And I don't think there's anything that Bradley Cooper can't do. He sings,
Right, exactly,
writes.
exactly.
He, you know, is he gonna do an Olympic athlete next and, you know, do high hurdles? Like he might, you know.
Yeah, I
So
agree with that. Totally.
he's good. All right. So, actor in a leading role, Bradley Cooper, Coleman Domingo, Paul Giamatti, Cillian Murphy, Jeffrey Wright. Who's going to win, Derek?
I'm going to go with Paul Giamatti.
Okay. I like that, but I'm going to go with Cillian Murphy.
Okay. Yes. It's going to be one of the, it's going to be one of the two of them for sure.
Yes. Okay. Actor in a supporting role. Sterling K. Brown. We love you, Sterling. That was an amazing performance because he was just out there. I mean, you could tell he had
Talk about
fun.
somebody else who delved into a role like head first.
Right. Like he just went there. And, you know, you could feel his zest. You know, he was just rolling off the screen. He was having a good time being a part-time asshole. And you loved him anyway, you know.
Agreed, agreed. Yeah.
It was really good. I enjoyed
Yeah.
it. So, okay. Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, Robert De Niro,
Robert Downey Jr.
Killers of the Flower Moon, and he already won the Golden Globe. Ryan Gosling for Barbie. Love you, Ryan,
He
but
was good. He was good. He was good, though.
yeah,
He
he
was
was
good.
good. And I just love when he sang that song, I'm Just Ken.
Yeah. I mean, he could easily win this category. He could win this category. Yes.
Okay.
He could win.
Mark Ruffalo or Ruffalo, or how you say his name, for Poor Things, and you didn't see it. I it was an interesting performance, but I don't think it's an Academy Award performance for Mark. I love Mark, but so who are you calling?
It's going to be either Ryan or Robert Downey Jr. It's one of those two.
Okay. And you think Ryan has a chance?
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay.
There's no way they are not going to honor a movie that has generated $1 billion and really saved Hollywood during a strike. There's no way they cannot honor it. They already gave the snub to the director, which was a horrible thing to do, and a woman director.
That's
so
true.
They missed the boat on that one. So they got to honor this thing. It's going to win best song probably for sure, but they got to honor this movie in some way. They have to.
Interesting.
Politics, Janine. Politics. Hello.
Politics. This is why we're handicapping these things. I think it's probably going to go to De Niro, because he's De Niro, and he plays the perfect villain. And right. He's really good. He's good. Like, he's so evil, but he doesn't look evil. He doesn't play evil. He just does evil things. And
right. It's
shocking. Right. You know, like, you're just stunned by it. But I don't know, you know, it could be Ryan or Robert Downey Jr. again. I don't think it's going to go to Sterling. I'd be shocked if it went to Sterling. I'd be happy.
No, it's not going to go to Sterling. No, it's not going to.
Okay. Actress in a leading role, Annette Bening for Naiad, which I didn't see. And I love Annette Bening.
Yeah.
Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon. Sandra Mueller, Anatomy of a Fall. Didn't see it. Sorry, Sandra Mueller. Hewler. See, I can't see. Sandra Hewler. Carey Mulligan for Maestro, which...
She was good. She was really good.
She was really good. Like, just the pain in her face.
Yeah, like, you got it. Like, it was, again, quiet moments of acting. It was good. She was good.
Joy and pain in that face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Emma Stone, who goes from an innocent to a wise philosopher and over the course of this movie, and the things that she does physically, and, you know, just what registers on her face, and you know, she's she's pretty daring in this film, I have to say. So she gets my vote, Emma Stone. And
yeah, I'm going with Lily Gladstone.
Okay. For reasons already explained. Okay.
Right.
Actress in a supporting role. Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks, Color Purple, America Ferrera, Barbie, love her, Jodie Foster, Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph, The Holdovers.
What's it's pretty obvious that it's going to go to Divine.
I would say so. I mean, this is her year. This is her season. It's a fantastic performance.
Right.
And the other people in here have been, well, I don't think America Ferrera has ever been nominated.
Nominated.
And she's been mostly a TV actress, getting accolades for her TV roles, but not so much in film. But I love her anyway.
Right.
So yeah, I agree. Divine Joy Randolph. Okay. So what else do we have? Directing. Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest.
Of Interest, right. They're probably going to give it to Christopher Nolan, for sure.
Yeah, Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
I agree with you there.
Yeah.
What else? One more. Original Score, they have American Fiction, which I think is a lot of... What's that homeboy's name? Oh, God. Anyway, forget it.
I don't know who did the music for American Fiction. Wow.
Yeah. I should have looked it up. Okay, never mind. American Fiction, Indiana Jones. Never mind. We're not even going to discuss this because we can't talk to the score. But original song.
Original song, yes. Barbie for sure.
Which one?
The one with Billie Eilish. Billie Eilish one.
I think it's a great song.
Yeah,
it really captures Barbie's journey, I think, to look for what am I made for, even though I'm Just Ken is a great song too.
It's a fantastic song.
It really is a good song. Okay, and now we have Best Picture. So once again, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. I say Oppenheimer.
I say the little movie that could, The Holdovers.
Wow. I would like to see that. That would be great if that happened.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's going to be Oppenheimer, but I'm going to say for this podcast, I'm going to say Holdovers.
Okay. Very good. Well, I think we'll just wrap it up right there. And I really appreciate you coming on. I know you.
Absolutely.
You're
absolutely
recuperating and, you know, I don't want to wear you out too much.
And I'll be able to talk to you about One Love next time, because I'm excited to see that movie, even though it's gotten very mixed reviews.
It has.
But everybody has praised him. And I love him as an actor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Kingsley Benadire. Yes, absolutely.
He has kind of been kind of hovering under the radar for a while. I remember he played Malcolm X in the movie that Regina King did.
Yes.
One Night in Miami, I think.
Yes.
And he's actually one of the Kens in Barbie.
Yes. And he can't even, I just saw a great interview on the Today Show with him, and he's not a singer. And so the fact that he has the family's blessing to play Bob Marley, it's kind of like, wow. And he's really, the trailer, I mean, I can only speak for the trailer, I've seen the trailer. He looks and sounds like Bob Marley. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see it.
All right, so I'm going to check it out, and I'll meet you here next month. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Take care.
Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Hey, Words on Flicks fans and friends. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. This was a really great conversation about the upcoming Oscars, and we'll see if some of our predictions play out. Politics versus performance. All right, y'all. See you next month. And until then, keep watching and keep watching out. Bye-bye.